on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, Shay here on Air Indie. Welcome and enjoy episode 29. First, Music History Boil Down for March 19th. In 1965, the Taylor and Cutter magazine ran an article asking the Rolling Stones to wear ties. The current fashion did not include wearing ties with shirts, and many tie makers were facing financial disaster. Jagger's response? Well, the trouble with a tie is that it could dangle in the suit. It is also something extra to which a fan can hang when you are trying to get in and out of a theater. Pretty wise. We have indie artist Evan Adams of the Heavy Bird Project showcasing his incredible new album, Pine Trees and the Faint Sound of Buzzing, out today. Heavy Bird is the solo project of Evans with contributions from session musicians. So hello, Evan. How are you today?
Good. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for coming on the show and talking about your new album that's out today, Pine Trees and the Faint Sound of Buzzing. We're going to look at three of the tracks there and some of your previous music on this show.
Great. Yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on here.
Well, I love your music. It gives me a Woodstock feel. Honestly, I really feel like I'm back at Woodstock. No, not back at Woodstock. I never was there. I'm way too young. But I'm talking about the music, the music of Woodstock.
No, me too.
Yeah,
totally. Well, I really appreciate that. I mean, a lot of that music has had a huge impact on me. Growing up and listening to it and, you know, going to concerts and music on the radio and so much of, a lot of that late 60s sound has just had a huge impact on, both kind of how I want to present music and just the influence, the feel of it. And even the times of, you know, the lyrics became pretty political in that era, which I really enjoy. It was kind of a new direction that music was taking.
Yeah, definitely. But you're a lot younger than that generation. So who influenced you? With me, it was my older siblings. Okay. Mm. And I dated an older boy at the time. Not that much older, but he introduced me to Led Zeppelin and The Who and all the rock. So who introduced you to this type of music?
Nice. I mean, mostly my mom, definitely my dad too. But yeah, growing up, they would take me to concerts all the time. I mean, the first concert I went to was an outdoor concert, outdoors. And my mom always likes to remind me that I was still in diapers. And it was Meatloaf and Hot Tuna was my first concert.
Meatloaf?
Yeah, Meatloaf and Hot Tuna. And then, my mom is absolutely crazy about the Allman Brothers.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of my childhood kind of at these Allman Brothers concerts and I just loving like how psychedelic their guitar jams could get, and I fell in love with their breaks for the percussion and with the drum set and the percussion. They'd roll out the timpani, and I mean, I'd never seen really anything like that.
So were your parents hippies?
Not really, surprisingly. it's a little confusing. Yeah.
Oh, they just love the music. Okay, that's cool. I just thought I'd get into some fun there. Yeah. So when did you first pick up your first instrument?
So I started playing the drums when I was, I think, around 8. Because I had been going to all these Allman Brothers concerts, originally I wanted to play the guitar. And I had gone to a music shop and they were trying to choose a guitar for me. And I was really, really small as a child. And they put an acoustic guitar in my hands and I tried to reach around the neck and I couldn't like my hand wouldn't even reach around it. So they told me, you know, wait until you're older. So I decided I wanted to play still. So I chose the drums, especially because I loved, right, like how the Allman Brothers would use, they'd have two live drummers plus the percussionist. So it was very, and my parents are, I'm still incredibly thankful that they let an 8-year-old put a drum set in their house. And I've been playing since. So,
so drums were your first. Mm-hmm. And then when did you pick up guitar?
I picked up a guitar in high school when my hands were finally big enough to play. And at that point I'd really changed gears. Right by the time I'd hit high school, actually I had become really into Metallica. So I was playing with lots of distortion and learning all their complicated riffs and all that kind of playing. And I didn't pick up the acoustic guitar until late high school.
Did you play in a band at that time?
At that point I had actually played bass guitar in a band that never played any shows, but that was at least my first entry into kind of the live music world, or at least playing with other people and not just playing by myself in a basement listening to, you know, something on headphones.
Wow. So you're proficient in drums, guitar, and bass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other instruments?
Yeah. I started learning piano, keyboard kind of playing late high school. It wasn't until after I graduated college that I was able to learn to sing well enough that I was comfortable to start singing in front of people too. That one was definitely the hardest for me because I'm definitely a very visual learner. So when I was trying to learn how to sing from someone else, it wasn't working because I couldn't really like see what was happening. Where it's much easier for me to like, I can watch someone play the guitar and it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I learned by looking too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that. So did you take formal vocal training?
No. The only thing I took formal lessons for was drumming. But super grateful and lucky for the teachers that I had because I had two incredible drum teachers. One of them taught me to read music, which is pretty uncommon with drum teachers. So then that's how I learned how to play like the marimba and the xylophone. And that's how my transition to piano was so much easier because I already kind of knew basic chord shapes and stuff like that.
Well, I'm interested to hear what's on your playlist, like based on what I'm hearing on your music, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What was on your playlist? Like what bands do you listen to most often?
Yeah. It kind of rotates. I feel like the really, really big ones, the big influences for me, are definitely the Beach Boys. I mean, Pet Sounds is just an incredible album. I always go back to it. But then also like influenced by a lot of other late '60s kind of psychedelic music, but then also jumping ahead kind of Radiohead is a huge influence for me. And then a lot of the kind of early '90s indie stuff that was going on. Like Death Cab, Modest Mouse, kind of moving forward with Arcade Fire. And then the whole shoegaze scene was huge to me too. Like My Bloody Valentine is like their guitar tones and their swells and how like bizarre and kind of psychedelic and how hard it is to describe what those sounds even are like was just huge to me. It changed the way I thought about music.
Well, you definitely have a unique sound.
Well, thank you.
Like if I heard it shopping, which usually you don't hear music, good music sometimes.
Right,
well, actually, in Canada, do you get great Canadian bands over the speakers? But typically, you don't.
Right.
I
used to work at a health food store.
Oh, that's
and
really
they,
cool.
They let me make the playlist, so I actually did have some of my music on the supermarket playlist. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. So do you have formal music training other than the drums?
No, really. In terms of private lessons, no. But then in college, I minored in music theory. And it's interesting, you know, there's so many sides to the debate. I hear some people are very against music theory, thinking that it could damage your creativity. But I don't really feel that way. I don't always use, I feel like, some of the things I learned in theory. Like I don't use theory while I'm writing, but I find it really super helpful after I come up with parts and then able to orchestrate out of that, it's really helpful to know kind of what chords I'm using and use some of that knowledge for layering.
Awesome. Well, we're coming up to the first track. Okay,
perfect.
It's one of my favorites. Nice. But actually, after I listened to the album, it was like, I have a lot of favorites.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's a very good album. So the track is Karmic Wheel, mm-hmm. Black Flag. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible tune. Could you tell us a bit about the backstory on that?
Sure.
Is it about something?
I feel like the whole album itself, I've kind of arranged to be a bit of a loose concept album that mm-hmm. is kind of expressive of this growth of my life kind of up until this point, starting with my birth and kind of ending with the present. And so when I was kind of putting it all together, I wanted this track to kind of start with me being born, and it's kind of, those are in the lyrics, that I'm born and it's late summer and the first half of the song, the Karmic Wheel, is this kind of childhood innocence. Mm-hmm. And then the song is kind of two songs melded together, which is why it's called Karmic Wheel, Black Flag.
Yeah, I see that.
And Black Flag is like the second half. And that's when it twists into this kind of, the losing of like the childhood, naivety and like the experience, and kind of seeing that things aren't necessarily as straightforward as I may have thought there to be. Like, there's a lot more gray area and there's confusion and questions. And so that's, it kind of encapsulates that. And I kind of worked too with the way, like the tones I use with the guitar pedals and the instrumentation to kind of set up a framework for the whole album. So you're kind of introduced to a lot of the elements that I use throughout the album right from the start. Mm-hmm.
What? So in actual reality, when mm-hmm. did you start your confusion? When you became a teenager? When you left home for the first time?
That's a good question. I'd probably say when I was a teenager, if not even a little bit earlier. Just because I've always been somewhat introverted. And I'm always curious of, you know, and it's not all artists, obviously, but, you know, does being introvert predispose you to be an artist, or does being an artist predispose you to be an introvert? So as I got older, I kind of saw.
I don't know. I'm an introvert and an extrovert.
Right.
Yeah, I think it all depends. I think if you were a complete introvert, you wouldn't be on this podcast or putting out music. So I think your creatives actually have true. Both sides to their character.
That's true. I can kind of see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I mean, I think that I'm kind of learning to be a little more extroverted. I definitely, like, high school for me was like a very introverted period. So.
Yeah, it's an awkward period. I'm interested about the Karmic Wheel title. Mm-hmm. Like, do you believe in karma?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've kind of been, there's also a lot of spiritual undertones in this album that mm-hmm. I'm tying into it. And I've also heard a description of karma just being that the more, like, not necessarily the more mainstream description of, if you do something good happens. If you do something bad happens. Mm-hmm. But I've also heard it described as the more complicated that you make things, the more complicated the results are that come back to you. So if you live like a very simple life, your life is very, very straightforward and relaxing. Whereas if you, the more things you accumulate, or the more jobs you take on, or like the more difficulties or things that require your attention, the more things in your life that require your attention, the busier and more difficult your life will become. I find it very interesting.
That's a very interesting take on karma.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember where I read it.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that because it fits. Totally, because yeah. That's exactly what happens, right. You know, especially with life. And all of a sudden they're going, why is everything turning around? Why is everything going negative? Right. But they have all this stuff and corporately right. have risen or whatever, and they just go too fast. I've seen it too often in my lifetime.
Right, totally.
With myself and others. I'm not perfect. So we're going to list a karmic wheel black flag.
Life and placed upon a karmic wheel. Early August flowers bloomed by night, a waxing moon revealed.
Well, you definitely put out an outstanding album, and that's a great track on the album. I love it.
Thanks. Really appreciate that.
So let's talk about your previous music. We're going to be listening to Revolution Blues from your previous album. Can you tell us a bit about your previous album and the song? It's a bit political, is it not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I was being kind. I was being kind.
More than just a little. Yeah. That album is called The Search, and that is kind of at that point in my life, I was kind of I'm trying to think of how to simplify it. I mean, The Search really describes where I am in my life, and I'm trying to I'm looking for a partner in life. I mean, I met my wife while I was working on that album. So I'm kind of, there's like that one, the search for a person is part of it, which is one of the themes of like love that goes through it. And then there's also a very anti-war theme that's spread through a lot of the album too, which is definitely where Revolution Blues lands in those two themes of the album. I always like doing, and I mean, I see the importance of when you have a microphone in front of you, the responsibility that you have of the things that you put out into the world and the impact that it can have. And I really love like a lot of John Lennon's solo work for the fact that he wrote songs that, and surprisingly became so popular that were able to be used in a setting that, you know, maybe it introduced new ideas to people, or people were able to, you know, go out and sing his songs like in public, and that they're really meaningful and more than just the enjoyment of the art, but that they actually can just kind of direct people into a new direction.
Give people a new direction, give people energy to get through what they're getting, dealing with at that time. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
A lot of iconic songs, and I do like that. Do you have a bit more to say about the actual track?
Let's see. I don't know. I mean, the track itself, I feel like it kind of is the most, I mean, it's definitely the most energetic track on the album. I always think of myself as more of a punk rock musician than I actually am. If you listen to it, like, I don't think anyone would really listen to my, like, one of my full albums and describe it as punk. But that was kind of where I would let that out. You know, I love like just the sound that I get from like the distortion and kind of the, that's okay. kind of the aggression that comes out of it, and just kind of like letting that pent up anger out through that song. There's also like a lot of times I'll use my music to kind of deal with different emotions that I'm experiencing or different events. And that song definitely helped me process a lot of like the pent up frustration with, you know, the current events in the world.
Okay, fair enough. So your debut album, The Search, was it a success?
That was actually my second album. My first album...
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. No worries. My first album is called It Hurts and It Heals. This is actually the first time that I'm really putting effort into promoting anything. I definitely was of the mindset that I know a lot of beginner artists can get stuck in, which is you just kind of imagine that somebody is going to drop out of the sky and sign you to a label and you don't have to worry about anything anymore. And I've kind of realized like, no, I need to, you know, make an effort and reach out to people. And also I super appreciate you having me on here again, because it really helps. I'm just kind of finally learning to how to get my music out there, especially because I haven't played too many live shows, because up until this album, my previous two albums, I did everything myself. So, and I hadn't had any other people involved in the performances. So I couldn't really figure out how to play the songs live. Mm-hmm. and at one point when I had released The Search, I played maybe four or five shows that were incredibly difficult, because I would bring two guitar amps, two floor toms, a crash cymbal, two microphones, and then I would loop guitars and then loop vocals and then play the drums over top of that. And it became incredibly complicated. It was like a lot of work to go through just to put on a show. So I wasn't able to do that for very long.
And you did that by yourself?
Yeah, that was, That was completely by myself, but it was just way too much work to try to move all that equipment. And then it took so much practicing to be able to do that much live looping.
It also is expensive.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, it just wasn't working for me. So I was kind of trying to figure out how to come back with a live band with other players for this new album. And then obviously the pandemic has complicated that. So I'm still trying to figure out how to get out there more.
So when you're on stage, is it yourself as a solo artist doing the music, or do you have session musicians with you that you hire for the show?
Yeah, I was planning on doing that for upcoming shows. I'm constantly working with this balance of that I like having the creative control and I like being the solo artist, but at the same time, I do really value other people's insights and opinions and just their musicality. So I've been learning more now, especially with this album and moving forward, to incorporate more people kind of in the process to get their feedback. And then to kind of, if I'm working with a session musician, to really give them freedom to do what they want to do, because I mean, I know that they'll do something I would have never thought of, and it's usually very inspiring to me.
I can see that. I can see that. And you had a lot of people collaborate on this project with you.
Yeah. In a previous band I had been in, I had worked with a violinist and a cello, and I just love the sound of those string instruments with the traditional rock setup. So my friend Emmett was so nice and helpful, and he added all these beautiful viola tracks to the album, and he layered them on certain tracks, and it just added this whole other dimension to the album. And then I worked with two different cellists, one who goes by Sister Ursuline and another Mark Ettinger. And they both added cello tracks that just really took it to a whole new place. So I'm really, really grateful for all their help.
Oh, okay. I thought my memory was also that they contributed the viola.
Yeah, my friend Emmett layered the viola on most of the
Emmett did the viola. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. That's what I thought, because that's one of my instruments.
Oh, so, yeah. Right.
I totally remember that. Totally remember that. I love that instrument.
Me too. I really love the range it falls in. I think it's such a sweet sounding instrument that sometimes, I mean, no offense to the violin, but sometimes I find it can be a little piercing, and I just feel like the viola just sits in a really nice range that I really appreciate.
Yeah, it feels more sultry.
Right. Yeah, totally.
If I had the lips, it would have been the sax. But
saxophone's great too. Yeah, no, absolutely. I've tried to learn some woodwinds, and it doesn't work well for me.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, we're going to listen to Revelation Blues from the Search album next.
Revelation is what I
That's a great song, and it was very easy to pick it up that it was political.
Yes, yeah. I don't really hide it. No.
I'll leave that there. Our next track that we're going to listen to is of the new album, No Question. Mm. The music video was done by Downs Films.
Yes, yeah. He's really great. I had worked with him a little bit in the past, and he had done a short video for just on like the chorus of a song from The Search. I collaborated him again with this video, and he really blew away like all of my expectations. He did a fantastic job with it.
That's amazing. It, unless it was my eyes tricking me, it seemed like there was a liquefied image of a bird that is rebirthed into a woman, like in a white blob. Now I'm taking a Freudian test, right?
I don't know. Yeah, well, I'm going to have to go back and check. It might be in there. I might have to just... Well, I like that a lot. I hope it's in there.
It could be, or it could be the way my mind saw it. But it was. I thought it was really creative. I thought you did a good job. You know, yeah. I don't know. I watched it three times. I'm going, is it a bird that goes into a woman? And honestly, that's what I saw. Okay.
Yeah, he's great. I'm definitely going to work with him again in the future.
So No Question is about what?
At this point in the album, I'm kind of like turning the spotlight on again, kind of on the spiritual seeking side. I had been sitting on this riff since before. I might have written it during The Search, and I just couldn't find a way to make it work. And finally, after all this time, and then especially with the cello, it really brought it to life. And then lyrically, I'd been fighting with it for a while as well. But the song really is kind of about kind of a Zen Buddhist mentality, where it's this self-reflective work where I'm kind of presenting the idea that so many people ask, like, why am I here? And then instead of trying to answer that question, you kind of look back on yourself and realize that there is no question. Like, that question doesn't even need to be asked, kind of thing. So to go before the question and kind of to be as you are without heading out and searching for some more difficult answer than just kind of being. So I guess it's as like a lot of the Zen tradition can be about like getting out of your head and back into your body. So that was kind of where I was going with that.
So we're going to listen to No Question. You know, what I really like about your music, Evan, is you take great care in trying to describe from your perspective a spiritual and or political or, for lack of a better word, personal development struggles people have in their lives. I like that.
I mean, I've been... One of my biggest influences, I mean, at least lyrically, is Leonard Cohen. I'm just, yeah, just so blown away by what he does.
Ah. if I had a dime for every time somebody said that. Yeah. No, but I can see that. But I wouldn't say it's like Leonard Cohen. I would say I can see that you have that... admiration for him.
Yeah, I really, he was one of the first people who, I mean, I kind of experienced it with John Lennon, with Bob Dylan, but especially with Leonard Cohen, it was the first time that I had seen lyrics to a song written on a page that worked completely as poetry with no music, like just worked on their own as poetry. And I love poetry. So that was very inspiring me to be like, can I make lyrics that could potentially sit on their own as a poem? So even just that mindset when approaching it has had a really big influence on me. And then on top of that, just being authentic and being as much genuinely as I am, as I can, either through my lyrics or through my music. I mean, that's when I listen to an artist that I really love, I feel like that is what they do best, is that they just be themselves. I feel like, and even across genre, like I'm often more interested in who is being authentically themselves than I am what the genre is.
I agree.
So, and to see that, I just try to emulate that. So rather than, I mean, I slip up all the time, but rather than trying to emulate another artist, I'm trying to emulate that they are being themselves.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Makes a whole lot of sense. Before we hear the next track, which will be Open Your Eyes, I want to talk about the initiative that you're doing, which I honestly was so blown away. I wish more artists would do that. You're doing an acoustic album release. Mm-hmm. You're launching it on both Instagram and Facebook.
Yep.
And I want to know why. And I want to know what fans can expect when they go to those events, which we'll talk about now.
Sure. Great. So it felt strange to having put all this effort into the album and into promoting it, to not do a release show, even though like this, and I had been planning to do a release show for this for, you know, long before even the pandemic started. And I, even though I hadn't really been playing live shows as Heavy Bird, I had been playing the drums live, with my friend and musical collaborator, Luis Mojica. And I just really, really missed playing live shows, and I had in the past, even in previous bands, but this is the first time I really, really felt like I missed it. Where sometimes it just was like, well, you know, if I'm going to be a musician, I have to play live shows. But now I feel like I miss that aspect of kind of the communal sharing of music. And then I also, while I was working on the album, I kind of saw that the songs themselves work acoustically, even though they're is very, very little acoustic guitar on the album. I think it's only on one or two tracks offhand. But so certain songs kind of worked differently acoustically. And I love the acoustic guitar. So I kind of wanted to explore that side of it a little more and just kind of the intimacy of it, bring as much intimacy and connection as I could to, you know, this strange digital experience. I'm going to be playing a few songs from the album on Instagram at 7 p.m. And then I'm going to hop over to Facebook at 8 and then play a few songs from the album and probably do a few songs from previous albums as well.
Well, acoustically. I'll give you a standing ovation because mortars. I love the stripped back sound, you know, and hearing an artist do an acoustic version of their song. I don't know. It just makes it more real.
Yeah, and I think that for some reason it seems kind of scary. Like, I feel like I often run into my own idea of thinking that, oh, if I play it acoustic, people won't know what to expect when they listen to the album. But at the same time, it's such a different experience, and I really crave it. And then I actually, the previous band I was in when I graduated college, we went on a tour across the country. And some nights we would play electric and some nights we would play acoustic, depending on the venue. And people responded so well to the acoustic. It was really surprising sometimes. So it's just kind of a different way to explore the same music. I think it's very interesting.
I do too. So we're going to listen to Open Your Eyes, which is part of the new album as well. I love the start. Like, is that a banjo or is it just the way you did the riff?
Oh, no, it's just a guitar that I'm really, really depressing. The whammy bar.
Yeah,
really
at first I thought it's a banjo. And I go, no, it sounds like a guitar. And I thought, you know what, I got to ask him. I love what you did. You did.
Thanks. Yeah, my friend told me, I was actually kind of unsure of if I was going to keep it in the song. And I sent a version of it to one of my friends without that in it. And he's like, no, you need to bring that back. It's so important. Because he in his mind, he heard it as like a car or an engine kind of revving to start the song. And I was like, all right, I could kind of see that. Yeah. And I just love the whammy bar. And I love doing weird things with the whammy bar. So on that song and on the song Shadows on the album too, I use a lot of the whammy bar just to kind of get these weird kind of atonal sounds out of
the guitar. It was outstanding. I loved it. It really set your music apart. And this is very psychedelic acid rock. I don't know. That's what I saw. So
yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I described it when my friend musician Emmett was asking what viola to put in there, I was just describing it as like an acid freak out. I was just like freak out on the viola during this part.
That's exactly what I thought. And I was afraid to say it to you. Yeah, okay. Perfect. So cool. Okay. Well, you definitely got your message.
That makes me happy.
So we're going to listen to Open Your Eyes.
Thank you.
Well, that's a great track to wind up this show. Your music's outstanding. You got to keep putting it out there.
Absolutely. I've had and I don't know if this is a common theme with other musicians, but there have definitely been times when I get kind of like down on myself and I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like it feels a little hard to keep going with it sometimes with everything else happening in life. And actually, again, like I had mentioned to you previously, before this interview, there was actually a point where I had quit playing music for, I think, like 4 years.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah, but it always comes back. And I remember I was really blown away when it just makes me feel so grateful when people tell me to keep going. I had someone, I had played a show when I was doing all this live looping, and it was, I had a great time. It felt like a really good show to me. And somebody I'd never met just ran out of the show afterwards and came up to me and said, "Don't stop doing that," and then left. And at first I was like, that's a really strange thing to say to someone after a show. Like I would think like someone would be like, "Oh, I liked your show." Like I didn't, like, cause it kind of assumes that I would consider stopping. But at the same time, I always hear that voice always comes back into my head. I have no idea who it was, but their comment was very valuable to me.
You never know.
Right.
Some people are just adept at reading energy. Mm,
very true.
Yeah. You never know, but, I give you credit for putting the music out there and I like it. So you keep me in the loop.
Of course.
So you mentioned Facebook, you mentioned Instagram. Are they your most active channels for listeners, fans to follow you?
Yeah, I definitely say I spend a lot more time on Instagram than I do. On Facebook, I'll just kind of post periodic updates, but Instagram I tend to find myself on a lot more.
And is your Instagram channel at Heavy Bird?
It is at Heavy Bird Music.
At Heavy Bird Music. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Evan.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You put out an outstanding album.
Thanks.
I wish I have no doubt it's going to be a success. And thank you for sharing your music.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. Next episode, Mike and Mandy join us from California. The talented pair write and produce from their home studio and have released splendid music created during lockdown. They rose above the pandemic blues to refocus and pursue long-buried dreams, releasing originals from home. When the world needs hope, these songs provide solace and release, positivity, and an outlet for angst. Their music is varied from indie rock, new wave, electro, and dream pop to alternative down-tempo lo-fi music. So catch at the pod on Air Indie, from my pad to yours over the airways. Subscribe feeds at thebuzzerpod.com. Cheers.